The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, Lord.
When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and he stayed close to the sea. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came forward. Seeing him, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, saying, "My daughter is at the point of death. Please come lay your hands on her, that she may get well and live." He went off with him, and a large crowd followed him and pressed upon him. There was a woman afflicted with hemorrhages for 12 years. She had suffered greatly at the hands of many doctors and had spent all that she had. She was not helped, but only grew worse. When she had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I shall be cured." Immediately her flow of blood dried up. She felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Jesus, aware at once that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who has touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to Jesus, "You see how the crowd is pressing upon you, and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. The woman, realizing what had happened to her, approached in fear and trembling. She fell down before Jesus and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace and be cured of your affliction." While he was still speaking, people from the synagogue official's house arrived and said, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any longer?" Disregarding the message that was reported, Jesus said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid. Just have faith." He did not allow anyone to accompany him inside, except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they arrived at the house of the synagogue official, he caught sight of a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. So he went in and said to them, "Why this commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but asleep." And they ridiculed him. Then he put them all out. He took along the child's father and mother and those who were with him and entered the room where the child was. He took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." The girl, a child of 12, arose immediately and walked around. At that, they were utterly astounded. He gave strict orders that no one should know this and said that she should be given something to eat. The Gospel of the Lord. Why does Jesus make us ask? The Gospels, why does he make people ask for healings or for a miracle, like the woman with hemorrhages? She doesn't ask, but she reaches out and touches his cloak. Jairus has to come and ask him to heal his daughter and then raise her from the dead. We're in the midst of a section of kind of miracles of Jesus in the Gospel of Mark. So a few weeks ago, we had Jesus driving out the demon from the demoniac. And then last Sunday, we had him calming the storm at sea. And even when they were caught in the storm at sea, Peter has to wake Jesus up and ask him to calm the seas for them. He's worried that Jesus doesn't care about them in that moment. He's sitting there going, how can you be so oblivious to what we need right now? And yet Jesus insists and makes them ask for this miracle. And then he gladly does it. It's not that he was not going to do it. But it seems like Jesus insists on making us ask. Now, normally when we ask someone to do something or ask for a favor, even if it's as simple as asking our waiter to bring us some more water or the food that we're ordering, it's mostly because there's two things that another human being might need from us, right? They might not know exactly what we need or what we want. So when we ask for something, we're telling them what we need or what we want. But there's also the question when we ask for help is if that person can actually do it. Right? Can you actually provide this thing that I need or that I'm looking for? And most of the time they are able to and they're happy to, and we ask and we get it and we move on. But if you really think about it, those two things really don't apply to Jesus. That if Jesus is the God incarnate, if he is all-knowing and all-powerful, that means he knows what our needs are, arguably better than we do. That he knows that this woman has been suffering for 12 years and would like to be healed. He knows what's going on with Jairus' daughter, and even when he's stopped in the way before they come and bring the news, I would argue he probably knows that she has died. So it's not that he doesn't know, and it's not that he's not able to, because we see afterwards how he performs these healings and these miracles. So he's capable and able to do them, and he knows about them. So why does he make us ask? Thought differently, why doesn't Jesus just walk through the streets in Capernaum and in Jerusalem, just healing everybody? Right? I imagine it like Oprah that one time when she gave everybody a car, right? Jesus walking down the street going, you get healed, and you get healed, and you're fixed, and you're not poor anymore, and I'll do that. Right? Jesus could have done that. And yet he insists that we ask, that we actually seek him and specify what we want or how we want him to be present in our lives. I think he does that because he wants us to allow him to take the place of the evil that has infiltrated our hearts and our souls. As we heard about in the first reading from the book of Wisdom, God did not make death or sin or the things that we experience that make us sad. In fact, he doesn't rejoice in the destruction of the living. But it's by the envy of the devil, of the evil one, that death entered the world. We experience this sin and the effects of sin like sickness and death. But then he concludes by saying, and they who belong to his company, the company of the evil one, experience death. Think about it. When we experience death or sickness or the evil of the world, it's because in some way we belong to the evil one. Doesn't mean that we're totally on his camp and totally not with Jesus, but it means that there's something in us that we've given over to evil. I think a story might be helpful. I remember we were in Washington, D.C. in high school for the March for Life. And a couple of my friends on a day off, we were just kind of wandering around D.C. doing whatever, and they thought it was very funny that they saw a palm reader there in Washington, D.C. So they thought, oh, this will be kind of funny. We'll go to a palm reader. It'll be no big deal. So they went in, and they were telling us about us, and they said, yeah, they said that I'm going to live to do this and yada, yada, yada. So we were laughing about it. We didn't think it was any big deal. And I remember very vividly, Father Jared Leese was the chaplain at Bishop Carroll at the time, so he kind of stumbled over and heard what we were talking about. Father Jared is normally very happy, very joyful and cheerful. So he said, well, what are you guys talking about? I said, oh, we went to this palm reader over there. And he got very serious very quickly. He said, what did you do? He said, oh, we just thought it'd be funny to see what they would say. We don't really think anything happened, but we just, you know, thought it'd be fun. And he said, I want you to come with me right now and go to confession. We're like, why, Father? We don't believe anything that they were doing. We're not superstitious about it. And he said, no, but oftentimes those things are connected with the evil one, are connected with the demonic. And he said, so even just going in, even if you think it's a joke, can kind of give something over to the evil one, can invite that source of death and evil into our lives. So he said, when that happens, what do? We go to Jesus. So if you come with me, I'm acting in the person of Jesus, and we'll go to confession, and it'll all be fine. So like quickly, they went over there, they went to confession, and everything was fine. But I think that illustrates how even things that we don't think of Simple little choices that we do for fun or ways that we react to the world around us can actually give over a little bit of our free will, can give a little bit of our hearts or our souls over to the evil one. And then from that, we experience that source of death. Just a quick clarification. I'm not saying that everything that's evil or bad that we experience is coming directly from the devil or because of something that we did. But instead, I think it highlights that when we experience that evil, the question isn't, why did this happen or what did I do to deserve it? But instead, how can I give it back over to Jesus? How can I bring it to him and ask him for that healing that I need? Because it's not that he doesn't know about it. It's not that he doesn't care or that he's not able to do it. But he'll never overcome our free will if we don't give it over to him. That if we've given that thing over to something in the world, he'll never come and snatch it from us. He won't just walk by and say, oh, I see how that's a problem for you, and great, da-da-da, I fixed it. He's waiting for us to say, Jesus, I don't want to do this anymore on my own. I don't want to give this part of my life over to the evil one or to the things of the world. It's that I actually want to choose to give it to you. I think that is the faith that the woman who had hemorrhages for 12 years and Jairus show in today's gospel. It's not that they're just desperate enough that they see that there's this healer and they think, you know what, I've got one last shot. I'm just going to see if Jesus can do something about this. We can imagine the woman feeling that way. She's gone. She's experienced this for 12 years. She's gone to doctors. She spent everything she has. And yet it's only gotten worse. And I don't think it's just her desperation that brings her to Jesus. But I think she sees that and she says, God, I've tried everything else to try to fix this. I've tried to do things on my own. I've tried to go to doctors and those that are smart enough to fix it. I've poured in money and resources and all the things I can think of to fix it. So instead of doing it on my own, I want to give it to you. I want to ask you to heal it and put my faith and trust that you can do something better than I can. Similarly, I think that's what brings Jairus to Jesus, that he's a synagogue official. He knows the Jewish teachings. Maybe he's heard about this rabbi and this miracle worker, and he's curious about him, but I don't think he shows that he believes Jesus is the Messiah or the Son of God. But he does believe that up to this point, they've tried with their daughter all sorts of things to heal her. So he finally says, well, how can I give it to God? Maybe it's by trusting this man, Jesus, to come and heal her and then ultimately to raise her from the dead as he does. So as we hear these readings, I think the invitation for us is not just to think that Jesus can do these amazing things, but actually to ask ourselves, what is it that I can give to Jesus? What is it that he's waiting for me to ask him for? Because there are things that he wants to give us, but for some reason, we're holding on to them, trying to fix them ourselves, or trusting in the things that have worked for us in the past. But instead, he wants us to open that door to allow him to be the thing that fixes it. Reminds me of a beautiful painting that's in England of Jesus standing at the door and knocking. It's referring to when the scriptures, when it talks about God knocking on the doors of our hearts. But in this painting, there's no handle on the outside of the door. And the artist said he very intentionally did that because oftentimes Jesus is knocking and he'll wait for us as long as he needs to, but he's never going to open the door himself. He'll always wait for us to come to the door and open it up for him. I think that's true of our life of faith when we come into encountering Christ for the first time in baptism, but it's also true in those other little areas of our life. Jesus is constantly knocking, seeking to heal us and bring us out of the grasp of the evil one, to rescue us from those sources of evil and death so that we can experience the fullness of life in him. Much like Peter and the woman with hemorrhages rejoice in today's gospel. Brothers and sisters, let us pray that we'll notice those places where Jesus is knocking on our hearts and that we'll have the courage to open it up to him, trusting that he can and will help us. Not being afraid to ask him for that help or guidance, but knowing that when we do ask for him to be there, he's always ready to show up. He's always ready to take those burdens from us, to heal us, and bring us into the light that he desired for us from the very beginning.